Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to the writer, actress, comedian Rita Rudner. She's best known as a stand-up comic who rose to fame in the 80s and has been performing ever since in a career that's included a popular, long-running showcase in Las Vegas. But she got her start in the theater, performing in the original productions of legendary Broadway shows, including Follies and Mac and Mabel. She and her husband, Martin Bergman, have collaborated on films like Peter's Friends and a handful of plays, and their latest, Two's a Crowd, is now running off-Broadway at 59 East 59th Theaters. Rudner is in the studio with me to tell us about the inspiration for her new show, what she intends to have engraved on her tombstone, and what she learned from Gower Champion and David Merrick. Hi, Rita. Thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome. I think you should add sweaty to that introduction.
Yes, it's very sweaty today here in New York.
My forehead, but that's okay because yes. That means that I don't know what it means. It means maybe I'll lose weight. Okay, yeah, there you go.
It also means the listeners can neither see your sweat nor smell it.
Yeah, so but now I've mentioned it, so I've kind of negated that attribute. Okay, never mind.
It's
I'm not
fairly
sweaty. I'm really pristine.
And it is fairly air-conditioned in here. So
it is. It's very white. It's got some very nice ice cube trays on the top of the ceiling with lights
nice,
in them.
Well,
even though the building isn't finished, some of the lights have already gone out.
Yep.
I don't know why. Yeah. I think you need a little bit of artwork.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, the walls are very bare.
Okay, but otherwise I think it needs work.
Yeah.
That's what I think. But I'm happy to be here with you, even though you're not as sweaty as I am.
No, only because I got here a little earlier.
Yeah. Well, I think you cheated.
So I saw your show, Two's a Crowd, last night, and I really enjoyed it. And tell me, why a stage show? You've written things before, of course, and you've written movies and plays. And why was this a stage? It's sort of a play with music.
That's it.
You do sing, but...
Yes, we wanted to write... we just kind of look around and see what's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And I always admired Neil Simon comedies, which to me are timeless. I mean, you look around and you still see The Odd Couple being performed all over the country. And Barefoot in the Park was even performed in the theater next door to me where we have our beach house, where we tried the show out.
Mm, right.
So...
Yeah, how long ago was that now? Was that last year?
Last summer, September. I don't know, somewhere there.
Yeah.
And then Martin and I decided, well, what's not there is a show that addresses problems of older people and has witty dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to write a Neil Simon play with music.
And why music?
That's what we did. Because I used to sing on Broadway.
Yep.
And
we'll talk about that soon. Yeah, but
I just thought it would lighten the mood because we didn't want to write something... Broadway tends to be divided into things that are very, very heavy or things that are very, very light.
Right.
And there's nothing kind of in the middle. So we wanted to try something in the middle, because we didn't want to do something To Kill a Mockingbird, which is important and a wonderful play, you can't add music to that because that's a serious, serious piece.
Right.
But there's another show that Martin and I both really liked when we were younger people going to shows on Broadway, which was They're Playing Our Song, which starred Lucy Arnaz and Robert Klein.
Right.
And we just said, let's do something like that, where there's a light-themed show where you could add music. So that's what we did.
Right. Martin, we should say, is Martin Bergman. He's your husband and also frequent collaborator. You've been collaborating with him for quite a long time now.
We met because I was performing at Catch a Rising Star and he was a comedy producer and a theatrical producer. And he was looking for shows to bring to Australia and to England and to the Edinburgh Festival. And he saw me and he had the good sense to think I was funny and he hired me to do the Edinburgh Festival. And that was we've been married for 31 years. So, right. And then we didn't date. Let me do math because I'm really, my daughter's good at math. I'm bad.
Yeah, yeah.
So then we knew each other for 2 years before that. So we knew each other for 33 years. And then we dated 33 years. But I knew him like 35 years. 2 years I didn't date him. And then we did date. And then we got married 31 years ago.
When did you start writing with or collaborating with him?
The day I moved into his apartment on the Gold Coast in Australia.
Oh.
We rented a typewriter. Because that's how long ago it was. And we started collaborating on our first movie script. And then we both started reading books about movie scripts, which we do, which what we did too with this musical play, reading books about writing musicals and how to incorporate music that that moves the theme along.
Yeah.
And so we just started studying it, and you do it over and over and over and over and over again until you get something right. And our first produced screenplay was Peter's Friends.
Right. Right. And what books were helpful for you for this project? Did you find?
Yeah, I never know the titles of anything, but there's lots of, Broadway books, how to write a musical.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of experience because I was in 6 musicals on Broadway.
That is true.
And I was in Mac and Mabel from the beginning, which was a tremendous, the other ones I was replacement in, but I was a tremendous learning experience. I mean, I saw Gower Champion just throw out huge bits of the show and bring huge bits in.
Yeah.
And then I saw the producer, David Merritt, come and insist
These are legendary. I mean, all our listeners will know this, but these are legendary names that you're talking about.
Yeah,
right
well,
here.
That's why I was so excited to be in the show with David Merrick and Gower Champion and Bernadette Peters and Robert Preston.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it was a huge learning curve. And it was interesting to see one of my favorite books. Oh, what, tell me his name. It's my favorite book about Broadway. And he died, and then he wrote screenplays, and then he was really good. Come on, you can do it.
Is it William Goldman?
Yes,
is
it? I know you can do it.
Is it called The Season?
That's
I think that's
season.
What that one's called.
Oh,
yeah.
See, I look at you, and you have all the knowledge right in your head. But William Goldman and The Season, there can only be one muscle, and if you've got two muscles, you're going to have a bad clash in personalities. And Gower Champion and David Merrick were both the muscle. And Gower Champion was really terrific. But the minute David Merritt came in and started once, he said, we've got to have a Hello Dolly number. We've got to have pretty costumes. Right. We've got to do, because he comes from a different place than Gower Champion, who's going to follow the story. So that was just such an interesting interval where we all got fitted for these gorgeous costumes and hats. And he wrote a song. We all called it Hello Mabel. And in the end of the first act, we all came in and we danced in these gorgeous costumes and had nothing to do with the show and never appeared again. And David Merrick insisted that we use the costumes again, so we did them in the bow. And and then no one knew who we were because they'd never seen us in these costumes. So it was really interesting. And I used all of my experiences. We read lots of books, and then we tried it out in a little playhouse.
Yeah.
And we're still tinkering. But what we wanted to do, that we know how much an audience loves good dialogue, witty dialogue, and classic confrontations between two styles of people trying to share the same space.
Right. And you're also, I know you're also at work on an autobiography. Has anything in To's a Crowd inspired by, taken from your life, or
there's nothing
any autobiographical?
No, but I do have friends who are very, very much like my character, who's Wendy Solomon, who are very precise and organized. I used to say one of my friends, you'd open her refrigerator and her food was on little hangers. You know, she was just like a closet.
Wow, really?
Everything's in alphabetical order. And one of those people. I've never been one of those people. I'm a mess. When a burglar once broke into my house, things were neater when he left. See, that's my joke. But anyway, I'm much more Oscar than Felix. But this is kind of a classic Oscar-Felix situation until they get to know each other.
Right.
And it's also about people having different layers. Because that's one of the lines in the play is, I shouldn't judge a man by his shirt.
Right.
Because this is a man who, even though he's... seems that they would have nothing in common. They do connect on certain levels once they get to talking to each other.
Right. And who, you said there can only be one muscle in a show.
Martin's the muscle.
I was just going to ask. Okay, thank you.
There's nobody else. I mean, I have suggestions, and we generally agree on things, which is how we stay married.
Right.
But he is the one who decides things. But if I strongly disagree, I'm going to say it. But it's very rare that I think his judgment is... not on the money.
Yeah. What in general is your collaboration process like? How do you write together in, on a sort of day-to-day basis?
He's the organized one.
Okay, yeah.
And he has the computer, and we have this great big desk because we bought a beach house in Laguna and we knocked it down, but we saved a lot of the furniture because it was antique furniture. And there was this huge desk and it's two-sided. You don't see many two-sided desks. Mm-hmm. And it's all scarred up and we really love it. So he sits on one side and then I sit on the other side and I put my feet up and I stare at the ocean. And then he says, okay, we need a joke here. What can, and then I say the joke. And then we just, then we go out to lunch and then we discuss how we're going to develop the character for the next scene. And it's very enjoyable. And
yeah, that sounds nice.
I find things are much more enjoyable when you're doing them for free. Because when Martin and I would write, we were loads of movies in Hollywood and we got paid a lot of money, I have to say. And we sold spec scripts and all of a sudden there was an influx. One time we sold a script for so much money that when Martin went to deposit the check, the teller actually flirted with him. So I said, well, that's how you know it's a good check. When the teller's flirting with you, you're depositing the check. But they drive you crazy. And you go in, they're very mean. They say, this needs to be on page 20. Someone has to be shot. You're not following my rules. And I just got so dispirited. And then as one of my friends who's a screenwriter said, I said, I don't write scripts. I write novels with stage directions because nothing ever gets made, you know, and then you go through the process. In fact, this is funny. So the very first writing job Martin and I got was for a movie called it just got made. Okay, you're going to know this one again. It just got made, and it's about four women who do the bank robbery. And
Widows, right?
See, I love you. Will you follow me around wherever?
Sure.
Widows. So 30 years ago, that's the first script that Martin and I got to rewrite was Widows. And that's how long and how many incarnations things take. And when we got the script, Linda LaPlante, I think, who was the original writer, had already been fired, as had many famous writers.
Sure.
And they had just crossed their names off. And the first thing is how they're going to fire you on the script. And I'm sure 20 more people got fired in 30 years. We didn't want to live our lives like that anymore.
Yeah.
So we found that doing things by ourselves, and that's why I went to Las Vegas. Martin produced the show. I wrote my things. We went straight to the audience.
Right.
And we did really, really well.
You are the longest running solo comedian there? Is that right?
Okay. Now I've lost that. I think I've lost that title to Carrot Top. But now I say I'm the longest running comedy show that's not named after a vegetable.
See, there. Yeah.
So I can still say it. I just have to add vegetable.
Right. Yeah. And now you tour. Yeah.
I do, even here, Monday night, I'm out in.
I noticed that. Yeah.
I'm out in Morristown, New Jersey.
Okay. Yeah.
And then on August 5th, I'm in the Argyle.
I saw that. I think like
Babylon.
Long Island, right?
Oh,
somewhere.
I'm remembering.
Yeah.
See, I know things that you don't know, too.
Yep.
You're not the only brainiac in this very, very sparse room.
And so the you have a collaborator for the music in Choose a Crowd.
Yes.
Who, how did you find him? And
well, I do lots of radio because I do lots of promotions in and I raise lots of I do lots of charities.
Right.
So I actually met Jason Fetty, who we think is a fabulous musician, and at a charity show that I was doing for a local radio station. And we got to be friends and we heard some of the songs that he'd written. And he actually had albums released in England and Martin, and he became very good friends because they're both English.
Right.
And when Martin finds somebody he can relate to from his homeland, it's very exciting for him, even though we've got a lot of American friends. We live in America. And we said, let's try. And he came up with some songs, and we're still rewriting a lot of them. But he's a witty, wonderful. We wanted to write songs that were reminiscent of the Beatles and lighthearted music. And we also wanted him. He was so effective in our show in Laguna. We added more of his singing as a narration plot and to move the show along, because unfortunately we don't have huge mechanical help, and we don't push a button and all things move. We have to move our stage ourselves.
Right.
So he wrote little songs that kind of cover the stage when we're changing the stage. And I just love listening to him. I just think he's a fantastic composer and a fantastic musician and has a evocative voice. Don't you think so?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think he's a great addition to the show. He's a great voice to have.
And we
also
wanted to do something different because that kind of never happens in a show.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So as we've talked a little bit about, you spent some time on Broadway. You sang and danced in a lot of shows that people will have heard of. Mm-hmm. You know, you were in Follies. You were
in
Annie.
Promises,
you were in
Follies,
Promises, Promises.
Annie, I mean, Magic
right?
Show, So Long, 174th
Magic Show,
Street.
The Doug Henning Show, right?
Yeah, I was understudy to Charmin, uh-huh. And also Dina.
Right.
And I got cut in half, and I got changed into a tiger, and it was very, I loved doing it. And that was one of my standby jobs where I didn't have to go to the theater every night.
Oh, great.
I just had to call in.
Yeah.
That was good. That was a good job. Yeah.
What are your memories of Broadway in general at that time? This would have been in the sort of late 60s, 70s, early
80s. It was in the late 70s and 80s. No, yeah. All through the 70s because my last show was in the 80s.
Right. Yeah.
So, and I came to New York when I was 15 and... In fact,
and you'd been a dancer before then. Yeah, you studied dance, and
I started when I was 4.
Yeah.
Oh,
right,
yeah. I did all acrobatics, tap, jazz, mostly ballet. I was in ballet companies when I was 10 and 11. I was always a dancer, but you know, we just did the Apollo, the amount of 50th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just remember, and I was 15, living by myself in the Barbizon Hotel for Women. There were no TVs or anything.
Yeah.
And I went down and sat with all the old ladies, and we watched, because there was a bunch of old ladies at the Barbizon Hotel for Women, and I watched The Landing on the Moon and the black and white television. How weird is that?
Yeah.
That I was 15, just sitting there with, oh, God. But anyway, my daughter's 17. She's not allowed out of the house.
Yeah.
In fact, she's here, and she's the wardrobe mistress backstage, so I keep an eye on her.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah. And what... well, first of all, I have to ask you about Follies, because I feel like that is a show that is particularly legendary.
Wasn't that Broadway. I was so honored. I went right from Promises, Promises to Follies, and I replaced...
And your replacement,
The legendary... I was the first replacement on Broadway, and I replaced Graziella Danielle.
Oh, wow.
Who was phenomenal dancer and choreographer.
Yeah.
But she did lead tango, and Margot, another girl, transferred into lead tango, and I took Margot's spot into the regular tango.
Got it.
But just to be one of the Follies girls was, I mean, I was on cloud nine that I could get a job like that. And I was just honored to go into the theater every night and be in a show that was that important.
Yeah. Yeah. What is there a show in particular that has really meant a lot to you over the course of your career? You talked about Mac and Mabel.
I think Follies and Mac and Mabel were my two favorite shows. I liked Annie. Annie was important because I had a part.
Yeah, right.
And I was Lily St. Regis, so I got to actually talk on Broadway in my own part rather than when someone broke a leg or, you know, couldn't make it. So that was really important. But that was kind of the time I said, I've done this for 10 years. Maybe I should try something else. There aren't too many female comedians. I'll try that.
Right. Were you a jokester before then? What led you to comedy, I guess, other than...
Never
I mean,
said anything.
Yeah.
I was so quiet, and people always said, what's wrong with Rita? And then people still say, well, Rita was never funny. Why is this happening? I just decided to learn how to be funny. And I thought it was something that could be learned.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Evidently.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And so what are the rules?
One day I'll write a book about
it. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that seems right.
I can't really say it in one little sentence. Yeah. There's a lot that goes on.
Right.
And it seems effortless. It's the same. It's a lot the same as ballet, where which is what I was schooled in, where when you see a ballerina, you go, oh, that looks so easy.
Sure.
You know, anybody can do it. And then you try it.
Yeah. Right.
And it's the same with comedy. You go, people go, oh, my friend's funny. She should be on stage. And then they get on stage. Oh, well, it's not that easy, is it?
What? Of all your theatrical experience leading up to that, what in your theater experience prepared you? What did you feel well prepared for moving into the stand-up world that your sort of theatrical background kind of
I guess that
you
I
for?
Was I was on stage, but that's the only thing.
I was just going to say, okay, and what are the differences?
Like everything is different.
Yeah.
And dancing, you don't stop moving, and in comedy, you don't move.
Right. Right.
And I was so scared for a long time. Not only did I not move, I wouldn't let go of the microphone. Because I was just gripping onto it for dear life. Yeah.
In a totally different way than stage fright would have been for you on Broadway? It was a different kind of fear?
There's nothing the same except I'm standing on a stage.
Right.
So I guess I must, and I used to, you know, talk on stage, do parts. But another thing that prepared me for Two's a Crowd was that this was my third play in Laguna.
Right.
And Martin and I adapted my first novel, which was about becoming a comedian, Tickled Pink.
Right.
And I played lots of parts in that. And it was fun because I got wigs and I had to do voices and I never did anything like that.
Yeah.
Then I got sent a play to do in London. and I didn't want to do it. It was a two-person play, but I like to challenge myself at least once a year to do something that's just out on a cliff.
Right.
And this was my yearly cliff.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, is this it? Is this the cliff?
This
yeah.
is my cliff. Yeah. Next year is probably my autobiographical cliff.
Right, yep.
And let's see what other cliffs I can find.
What comes after that,
yeah.
As you mentioned, there weren't very many female comedians back when you were
I knew Joan Rivers and Phyllis Diller.
Right.
That's
yeah.
all I was aware of.
And how hard was it to break through? Did you
Extremely
find,
hard.
Yeah.
There's nothing easy.
Yeah.
I've tried everything. It's going to be on my tombstone. Nothing was easy. And yeah. then if Molly, my daughter, ever comes to visit me, it's going to say, what have you accomplished today? I make her crazy when I say that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to come visit you then. You're going to come visit me. It's going to say, what have you accomplished
yeah.
today?
Have things improved in the comedy world, to your view?
I think so. Yeah. I think very slowly and, you know, marginally. But what I've found is that comedic actresses are now allowed to star in movies, which it didn't really happen when I was a comedian. You know, like I think Amy Schumer starring and writing in her own movie is a fantastic step forward. And there's so yeah. many great comedic actresses now with,
right.
you know, Kristen Wiig and Amy Poehler and Tina Fey and
right.
Melissa McCarthy. And I could just, you know, keep going
right.
on. I
right.
just think, and they're allowed to star in movies, which it was always Adam Sandler
yep.
and Claudia Schiffer is the wife.
Right.
Or
right.
somebody was always, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer is the new comedian. She's so funny.
Right.
Kim Basinger's never been funnier in but
right.
now real women who are funny are allowed to star in movies, so
right.
I think that's a tremendous step forward.
Who or what do you consider the sort of biggest influence on your sense of humor?
Jack Benny and Woody Allen.
The two of them.
Yes, I loved right. Woody Allen's writing,
mm-hmm.
and I thought he was a fantastic comedy writer. I used to listen to his albums in the 60s from that Hungry Eye, Hungry Foot,
oh.
Hungry Toe.
I don't know
something
that one.
Like
yeah.
it was a hungry part of your body.
Yeah.
And then Jack Benny, my mom always liked him, and I loved that he was so understated.
Yeah.
And I realized that my persona could never be aggressive because of who I was as a person, and I decided right. to kind of concentrate on an understated sort of comedy, which I got from those two people.
Yeah. Have your feelings about Woody Allen as a comedian changed at all?
Yes, I stopped. I stopped going to see his shows when he married his stepdaughter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I did. So. And I just thought that he, I think he was wonderful, but I think that everybody needs some editing. And for mm-hmm. some reason, he was somebody who I write a movie every year, no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, I think that there's nothing better than Hannah and her sisters. Annie Hall
right.
was
yeah.
a watershed movie for me,
yeah.
and I saw it over and over. And I went to see everything, Love and Death, and, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All he's wonderful,
sure.
but I think he—you can't just. I'm writing a movie every year. I'm doing it.
Yeah,
you know. How about spending some time on it?
Right, right, yeah. And so you are here in New York.
Yes, we're here
for the summer,
August 25th.
Yep.
And we are doing lots of shows, and the audiences are really, really enjoying them.
Where do you hope it goes next?
We don't know.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see. We're still, you know, tinkering with it, and. We always had offers, like I had a lot of offers to do the a play I did in Laguna, which was called Act Three, which was written by a different playwright
mm-hmm.
and it was sent to me.
Yeah.
And I have to figure out if it's worth it for me to uproot everything. And right now, the only reason, you know, I love doing this play and I'm so fortunate, you know, to be at 59 East 59th Theater.
Yep, right.
And
it's a great little theater. It's technically an off-Broadway theater.
Yes, and
right off Central Park.
Might be on 59th Street.
Yeah,
there's
might
a lot
be.
Of 59th.
Yep.
But this is my daughter's last year of high school.
Right.
And the reason that this fit into our plans is that she's here with us and we gave her her first job and she's very good. She has a headset on and she's running around to getting everything washed and cleaned and preset. And, and she hasn't made a mistake. I've made a few and she hasn't
yeah.
made a mistake.
Sure.
So I have to see if it fits in with our agenda.
Right. How do you find when you're acting and playing a role, how do you feel like that kind of intersects and interacts with the comic?
Well, we inserted some things where I can talk to the audience.
Yes, that's true. Yes, I noticed that last night.
Because
there are moments.
Yeah, because I enjoy talking to the audience, and I always feel, because I'm so used to it, I have a special connection when I talk directly to the audience.
Right.
And it kind of gives you an insight into what this woman is thinking in her inner self. So we might add a little bit more of that as the time goes on, because it seems to be working so well.
Right, right.
So I think that informs the play.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have other plays or plays with music or musicals even that are considering writing with?
No, now I got to finish my, I did finish my autobiography, but I'm going to go over and over and over and then see what I can do with that.
Right.
But, and I have loads of stand-up work whenever I want to do it.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. And I love it. People go, oh, you poor thing, you've got to travel. I say, oh, it's so hard. You know, I get on a plane, I order a mimosa.
Yeah.
I read a book. I don't have anyone saying, make me dinner, wash the dishes. You know, mom, where's my socks?
Right. Yeah.
And then I go there and I tell my jokes. And everyone's really nice to me. And I stay in a hotel and I have a glass of wine and I bring it up to the, and I watch my television. I go to sleep and it's like being on a little vacation.
Right. Yeah.
I read a book, I read a magazine, and it's then they get paid and everybody's happy.
How often does your act, how much does your act change show to show?
I always try to do new things all the time. I've got a whole bunch of notes right there that I'm going to, I can only do 2 to 3 things at the most, new things, because your brain can't really absorb that many new things, and you never know what's going to happen. So I always have to hammock it between 2 jokes that work and then put it in a specific place, and it's a complicated procedure.
Where are you finding most of your inspiration for your
life
jokes these days?
And the fact that I don't know how anything works these days.
Okay.
And the technology that I stay away from political humor because, first of all, it changes every day.
Yep.
So if I would write something today, next Monday, it would be obsolete and no one would be caring about it. And I think it's a perfect platform for people who have a nightly show or even a weekly show, but not for someone who has a show that has to build and have longevity.
Right, right.
Raising a teenager, being married for a really long time, all these things that people can relate to.
Right, right. Well, we look forward to seeing you on stage, both in To's a Crowd and in your comedy shows. And thanks for being here. Enjoy the run of your show.
Thank you. I'm going to enjoy it. And I'm going to take a shower.
Okay, do, please.
It's really hot out there.
Okay. Thanks, Rita. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Care.
Bye.
That was Rita Rudner, the co-writer and star of To's a Crowd, playing this summer at Off-Broadway's 59 East 59th Theaters. And you can also catch our stand-up sets at various stops around the country. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd be very grateful if you took the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It's the best way to help a podcast like ours grow. Or tell a friend. I'll be back with another new episode in 2 weeks. Until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.